Today we continue. This would be the third message in the series regarding fear and how our faith overcomes the fears that we face. I know that a lot of times we identify specific things, but I think one of the things that is common to all at various times is the fear of being alone. Loneliness. Loneliness is a common malady among believers. It comes to us for a variety of reasons. We may be facing overwhelming odds, in which case we become so focused on whatever obstacle is before us that it seems we lose sight of those that are closest to us or even God, who is always with us. And suddenly we find ourselves in the face of that obstacle or that issue being very isolated and feeling very alone. We experience loneliness as believers because we live in a world that is broken, but we do so with a spirit that is redeemed. The necessity of being in the world but not of it sometimes causes us to feel somewhat alone, as if we are the only ones that are choosing to live in this way and to walk according to God's plan. We have God's economy in our hearts with a desire for Him and for home, but we live daily with the oppressive presence of evil that seems predominant over all. We can feel like sometimes, what difference can I make in a world that is so lost? Yet we know that God has not called us to change everything, but rather to be obedient and to be an instrument that allows Him to bring change. We become attached to others. When we lose them or for whatever reason relationships dissolve, we feel alone in that pain. It is unimaginable that anyone could feel what we do. Even if they could, we ask ourselves, what difference would it make? The overwhelming darkness of grief and loss leaves us with feelings of isolation, even abandonment. And we forget that Christ has faced all that we have, that God understands what it means to lose someone and understands our pain even better than we do. The real problem is not the loneliness, but the inability to accept our reality in faith and obedience. It is a struggle, and certainly it is a process. Loneliness sometimes becomes the justification for our refusal to move forward, regardless of what circumstances brought us to that place. It becomes the excuse that we offer for an unreasonable demand for something that we can never have. Fortunately, God understands this as well. And even in our refusal, sometimes He continues to draw and to lead us through those circumstances with grace and mercy and peace. Loneliness is real, and it comes to all. I'm reminded of Elijah, one of my favorite biblical characters. After Elijah had called down fire from heaven, after he had defeated all of the priests of Baal and the false religion of the land, he was set upon and a bounty was put on his head. And he decided to run and hide. And as he hid in the cave from Jezebel, who threatened his life, he cried out to God and he said, "Oh God, I am the only one. No one is left that serves You only." Sometimes we feel like that, don't we? I'm the only one, Lord. No one understands. No one knows. That's never true, but even if it were, God always understands. Title of this message is very simple. You are not alone. No matter what you think, no matter how you feel, you are not alone. Isaiah 41, verse 10 is a passage that the prophet spoke to the people that was given to provide them a source of strength after they had gone through a period of judgment. a judgment that would in fact be brought about as a result of their sinfulness, that they would face an enemy that would overpower them and defeat them. And then God would bring them back. He would restore them. This time, though, with a commitment to truth and righteousness, and they would follow God in a way that they would understand and relate to Him in holiness. And so He spoke these words to them in order to offer them some encouragement and to help them as they made that adjustment. It's an important verse, and it's very relevant. I don't want to take it out of that context, so that's why I'm sharing that background with you. But I do want you to see that while it was given in that specific way, it's not limited to that. And it actually has meaning for us in a profound manner today that goes even beyond such times of restoration. Two very simple things help us to understand this passage. And the first of them is the presence of God. He says in verse 10, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God." The presence of God. So often we wonder, where is God in the midst of the circumstances of our lives? Where is God when it comes to the protection that we need? Or where is God when we seek direction or deliverance from some issue that we face? Where is God when we feel so isolated and alone? God is always where He has been. He never moves or changes. We have this assurance. And so when we come to the hardships of life, and especially those that tend to make us feel isolated from others, and more importantly, in this case, isolated from God, it is vital that we cling not to what we feel, but to what we know. It is absolutely essential that we have well established in our heads, in our hearts, something that we can know. One of the delights this year that I have had in preaching and teaching is the Wednesday morning Bible study. We're going to have to come up with a new name for it besides just men's Bible study. We got to come up with something cool. I don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to work on that. We've been averaging about 35 to 40 guys every Wednesday morning. And we've enrolled now almost 50 in total numbers. And it's been tremendous to see their response. Yesterday we got together for some fellowship time, and we went out and had a skeet shoot and a pistol shoot and a barbecue. I'm telling you that nothing inspires the spiritual element of a person's heart like large bore and large caliber firearms. That is just a tremendous thing. And so we had a great time, and it was a perfect day, and just enjoyed ourselves immensely. But more than that, it was the fellowship. It was the connections that are being made among these men as they offer help and support, encouragement to one another. Gene Martin shared his testimony, and he promised us not that he wouldn't cry, but that he would cry. And he made good on that promise. And as he wept and shared his heart of what God was doing, I could hear the men around me also sniffing, and I could see the rubbing of eyes. And here we are, you know, we didn't even make any pretense. Most people who brought their guns, you know, we wore them as we walked around. And it was just awesome. Here we're hearing this message about how God is working in a person's life to produce something that is greater than him, something that honors God. It was just an exciting time. All that's well and good, and it's all part of it, and it's been a part of the goal that we've had in developing this group to help connect one another. But ultimately, my goal when we started this group was something very, very simple and very direct. I wanted to teach the men what the Bible says that they can know. And from what they know, then, to develop how they feel or to learn how to respond to what they feel and encounter. rather than the reverse, rather than feeling something and having an experience come over us and then reacting to that feeling, I wanted us to be able to bring that feeling, that emotion, under the control of what is always true. And it is always true that God never leaves you. Even when the hardships of life or the difficulties and uncertainties or the foolishness of man brings us to a place where we feel alone, either because of what someone else has done to us or because of what we have done to ourselves, the reality is, in both cases, God never leaves. You've got to trust what you know, the presence of God. Trust in the certainty of God's promised presence. That's what he means when he says to us, "Fear not, for I am with you." The force of that passage and the force of that word when he says, "I am with you," it is the same thing that we see when God spoke to Moses on the mountain at the burning bush. And Moses said, "Who are you? And who is it that I should say has sent me when I go to the children of Israel?" And God said, "I am. Tell them I am has sent me." The impact of that passage and of that understanding of the name of God as he gave that to Moses means not just "I am" right now. It means "I have always been." It means that I am today and I will be forevermore. It is an infinitive that reminds us that God is not limited and God is not bound by the same kinds of rules and requirements of you and I in a physical existence. God goes so far beyond anything that we could ever possibly imagine. The reality that we need to cling to is the certainty of God's presence. He has always been, he is today, and he will be tomorrow. What is it that enables us to overcome those things when we are reminded we're not alone is the fact that we can trust in the certainty of God's promised presence. But look at also what he says, not only "for I am with you," but he said, "Be not dismayed, for I am your God." We can trust in the identity of God's revealed character. The presence of God helps us to trust in God in such a way that we can be assured that he's promised to be with us. But he has also assured us that he has revealed himself to us. Don't be dismayed. I am your God. The force of this second phrase is something that brings into very sharp focus the understanding of the nature of the relationship we enjoy with God. One of close intimacy. One of significance that goes beyond what we often think of when we only think of God in religious terms. Can God be present in the fellowship of relationships? Can God be present in marriages? Can God be present when we are dating? Can God be present in friendships? Can he be present in all of these different varieties of relationships that we experience along the course of life? The reality is, yes, he can. And he has revealed to us that if it is possible for us to have all of these different relationships with each other, that is but a shadow of the depth of relationship we should have with him. God's revealed character has helped us to understand that we have identity through that relationship with him. I was acting on behalf of the church recently in a business transaction that we were making, and I set up an account, and it was with with an organization that had a regular retail part of it inside of it that everybody goes through. And then it had a business side as well that we were going through as a church and as a nonprofit organization. And so I was introduced to the business team leader. And this person came out and welcomed us as customers and so forth, and did a very good job of providing service and support and all of that by being a part of this business side of things. You know, it gave us an additional break, but it allowed us to utilize our nonprofit status in the purchases that we were making and so forth. I said to this person, I appreciate the attention that you've given us and the way you've taken care of what is typically a difficult transaction process. I said, you've made it a little bit easier. And I said, you know, in the future, will we be able to rely on this kind of service as well? And will this agreement that we've entered into for the purpose of this transaction carry on for others in the future? And the person said, oh, by all means, there's no problem with that. This can be an ongoing account. And I said, you know, from time to time, we've seen these things as they've been released. We've had difficulty getting access and getting, and you know, we've had to wait in order to bring about these upgrades or whatever. And this person looked at me and said, that was before. Now you know me. I said, so you're telling me that it isn't what I know, it's who I know. And she said, exactly. Now, I'm not sure that's necessarily fair. And I'm not sure that everybody else that deals with that particular company would be in agreement or like that arrangement. But it is the reality. Preferential treatment is given to volume dealers and volume sales and things like that. And because of the contact with this person, it changes the nature of the relationship. I'm telling you that when you're dealing with the struggles of life, loneliness or anything else, the presence of God is something that is assured for us all and that is never going to be turned away. And what God has revealed to us is that there is a relationship there that has drawn us in as a result of His grace and His calling. And He says to us, as the prophet proclaimed, for I am your God. It's not what you know. It's who you know. This is significant. This is a powerful reality. We trust in the identity of God's revealed character and the nature of this relationship that He has given to us by His grace. He's the one that initiated that relationship. He's the one that called us to Himself. He is the one that has made it possible through Jesus Christ. And nothing that we experience in this life, no matter how hard it is going to be, will ever rise to the level of significance of that eternal truth. And so when we face those times, we can trust in the certainty of His promised presence, but we can trust also in the identity of His revealed character. For He says, I am your God, be not dismayed. So we see the presence of God. But in the latter part of the verse, He goes on to help us understand that being in His presence, trusting in Him in the face of loneliness, invokes and brings about His power so that it becomes active in our lives as well. He says, as a result of this, trusting in His presence, trusting in the nature of the relationship, He says it's not only the presence of God, but secondly, it is the power of God. I want us to look at three things regarding the power of God in the latter part of this verse. And He says to us, I will strengthen you, I will help you, and I will uphold you. First of all, I will strengthen you. The power of God reminds us that God gives strength in times of weakness. It is something that only He can do. And we need to be reminded in each of these instances that what God is doing is not taking the resources that you feel like you already possess and He's just adding to them. I want you to see this as God taking your resources that have failed you miserably and replacing them with His strength. His strength is made perfect in our weakness, the Bible says. His strength. Notice that He remains he remains with a focus on His strength. And so He's not saying, I'm going to strengthen your strength. That's weakness. One of the reasons that that passage is true is that until we come to the end of ourselves and we stop trying to rely on our own abilities, it is unlikely that we will trust Him. And so when we do come to the end of ourselves and we realize that whatever ability we possess is never going to be sufficient, then we trust in Him. And it is in that trust that we place in Christ that His strength is activated in our lives. It's an act of faith, and it is a matter of faith, but it requires obedience. How does it look, and what's it feel like? When His strength is made perfect in our weakness, when He gives us strength or strengthens us as He promised to do in this passage, what is that going to feel like, and what is that going to look like? Well, I'm not sure how it's always going to feel because that's probably unique to each individual. But the way it's going to look is that you're going to believe that when He says, I will strengthen you, that indeed He will do that. And you go on with your life in the assumption that that's going to happen. That's faith. That's what it looks like. Sometimes it's really, really hard, and sometimes it's very uncomfortable, and sometimes it doesn't feel like what you want to do or what you even ought to do in some cases. But He says that we are to move forward in faith, and it is that act of obedience in which we discover and experience His strength. What does the strength of God look like? Well, sometimes it looks like the kind of strength that is revealed in Jesus Christ as He died on the cross. Have you ever thought about that dying on the cross was not an act of weakness, but it was an act of strength and will? Committing to something that was painful and committing to something that was unpleasant, to say the very least. Committing to something that was horrific. And doing so knowing that you possessed the power of eternity in the universe. And you could have wiped everybody out that stood around you. You could have stepped off of that cross and returned to heaven at any moment. You know that you are God and that you are more powerful than all of these that are around you. And these that are mocking you and killing you. And yet strength. It was strength that held Him on the cross. What does it look like when He says, I will strengthen you? It may not always look as you expect. That is, take away whatever bad feelings you may have or take away whatever difficult circumstances you may face. It may be that it is His strength realized through your willingness to be faithful, even when it's really, really, really hard. But He says, I will strengthen you. Again, what do you know? You know that He promised to do that, and He is always faithful. He says, I will help you. I will strengthen you. I will help you. Have you ever noticed how sometimes there are those who want to help, but that help really doesn't help at all? I've noticed cooks are like this. When you have someone who's really focused on preparation of food and you come in and say, well, what can I do to help? Well, you can get out of my kitchen and leave me alone. That'd be a big help. Because after all, too many cooks stirring the pot ruins the stew, right? And so, you know, sometimes the help that we want to give isn't really the help that is needed. Sometimes what is needed is just more of a support. more of an encouragement. I think we have this idea that in order to be helped, we have to engage or we have to add whatever it is that we have. Now, some tasks require help, you know. You got to clean up. Most cooks will gladly accept help when it comes to doing dishes. And so that's a whole different story. But it also requires a different level of skill. And so we have this feeling or this notion that we need this help and we need this encouragement, but we're not sure how to go about getting it. We're not sure how to go about accessing it. God says, I will help you. He doesn't mean that he's going to interfere. He doesn't mean that he's going to impose in a way. It means that he is going to provide the sort of encouragement that is necessary to allow us to continue to be obedient to what we looked at before, and that is trusting and following and being faithful. Does he intervene in our lives? Sometimes he does. Sometimes he does intervene. Sometimes he steps into the midst of whatever is going on. Sometimes his help comes in ways that we don't really... Sometimes the best help that we can get is for him to say no to whatever it is we've asked for. And just simply not enable whatever problem we've been going through. Sometimes God has to help in ways that are consistent with his wisdom that we haven't come to a full understanding of. Here's what we know. What we know is that he said, I will help you. I will. And so you have to trust, again, what you know. And then he says in the last phrase, I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. God gives strength in times of weakness. He gives help to the helpless. And he gives support to the hopeless. There is a hopelessness that sometimes envelops us and overwhelms us to the point where we simply can't see beyond whatever situation we are in. Sometimes that is unavoidable, at least for a brief period of time, but eventually we move out of that. And it is the kind of support that he offers through the strength of his righteousness. I will uphold you. When you would otherwise fall down, or you would otherwise be unable to lift yourself up, he says, I will uphold you. Every child that has ridden on the shoulders of his father knows what this feels like. It is the perfect example. Every child that has fallen down and been injured and picked up by a parent knows what this feels like. Every time we reflect on the way that we have lived and the circumstances that we have faced and the way that we have gone through those, and someone has come along at just the right moment or has spoken just the right word into our lives or has sent just the right card, we have been encouraged, we have been picked up, supported. We have multitudes of examples of how this works. Only here we see it on a spiritual and even cosmic level as God says, I will uphold you. But he does it in a unique way. He does it with his righteous right hand. There is purpose in him saying that. There is meaning to that. He says, I'm going to uphold what is righteous in you. In other words, he is not going to uphold you if you are bound and determined to continue to do what is unrighteous. He's not going to uphold you if you're bound and determined to do what is contrary to his will and his word. If it feels like God has abandoned you and yet you are living your life in the complete opposition to what he has taught us and what you know in your heart is best and right, then don't be surprised if you feel alone. He has not abandoned you. The reality is you have abandoned him. It is the very height of lunacy for us to demand that God intervene in our lives and yet we be unwilling to conform to his image. And yet that's exactly what we do. God owes me one. Why? What have you done that would make God beholden to you? I mean, seriously. There's nothing. We misunderstand sometimes, and then in that misunderstanding or that just stubborn refusal, whichever it happens to be, we continue to cling to something that is untrue and something that is never going to work. And so we find ourselves feeling more and more isolated, and then we become desperate, and then we become frantic, and then we find ourselves just kind of losing it. You know what I'm talking about. It is in the midst of all of this that God has said, I will give support to the hopeless. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. But the encouragement and the support that he gives is going to be by his standard, not yours or mine. It's vital that we remember that and that we understand that if we choose to reject his truth and we choose to live in a way that is contrary to his word and his will, then we are also choosing to rely on our own resources, and that's never going to be enough. And so what about this business of loneliness? We're reminded that loneliness that produces the kind of fearfulness that comes with it is something that isolates us from God. It isolates us from others who can be an encouragement, and it causes us to feel so often, not only isolated and alone, but then we reach a point where we start to imagine, is there any point? Does my being here even make any difference? I want you to know that your being here does make a difference. There is no such thing as a life that has no value. If for no other reason than the fact that we are all made in the image of God, you have value. God has not called me as a pastor to build a church. God has called me to share the gospel and to minister to people. I know that the church is the people. I know that. But most people don't. People drive by and they see what's going on around here, and I'll see them out in the community. Well, the church must be going well. Things are growing over there. I see you've got a new building. How do you know that we're growing? You've never been to a service. You have no idea about our numbers. The reality is we're not growing. What we're doing is we're exchanging faces. There's a lot of new faces in the building today. There's a lot of new faces in the services today. But it's not because we've added new faces. It's because old faces are gone for whatever reason. And we've replaced them with new faces. But we remain static. We remain plateaued. We're not growing. And one of the reasons that we fail to grow is because we forget that God has not called us to build institutions. God has called us to reach out and minister to people. And we do that, whether you're the pastor or whether you're a Sunday school leader or whether you're a small group minister or a deacon or you're a Christian who has become a part of this body. God has called us to reach out to people. The numbers don't matter. The institutions don't matter if the people fail to matter. The reason people are afraid is because we've not helped them to find the presence of God. We've not helped them to experience the power of God. You want to grow the church? Start by growing from within. If every believer embraces the truth of what God says in his word and makes that the standard by which we live, and then accepts the calling that God has given to all of us to reach beyond ourselves to those that are in our circles and to minister to them with encouragement and to be the physical evidence of the spiritual reality that he has promised. To be that kind of person to remind that God is always present. To remind that God wants you to be a part of his life as much as he wants to be a part of yours. To remind people that he gives help to the helpless. He gives hope and strength to the hopeless. And he gives strength to those who are dealing with weakness. That's where it's about. That's where it's going to really be meaningful and helpful. That's what building the church is. It's not turning us into something that others look at as some sort of institution. It's helping us to realize that God has put us here, given us resources to utilize in order to declare his glory, to reveal Jesus, to share him in the way we live. What would Jesus do faced with the loneliness of those around him? He would comfort, he would encourage, he would help, he might correct and redirect whatever would be necessary in order to help that person move away from whatever had them isolated and in harm's way, and to bring them into the comforting grace of God's presence. That's what we need to do. Is it simple? Simple to understand. Costly and difficult to do. But at least we can understand it. So what does all of this mean? Well, in the simplest terms that I know how to offer, it simply means you are not alone. No matter how you feel, no matter what you're going through, you are not alone. Hang on to what you know. Hang on to who you are.